Accession number 19094, Reel 4.
Major Patterson, Reel 4.
The company commander was very strict with the young officers, and sometimes I felt that he was probably a bit too strict. But at the same time, bearing in mind that as a platoon commander, that's the best time in a soldier's and an officer's life, the best command he'll ever have. And he'll learn more as a platoon commander than what he will do if he remains in the services, and it will stay with him for the rest of his military career. Platoon commander is a great commander. I was one myself as a sergeant. You know, it's a big responsibility, and the thing is, with a platoon, it's probably it's the lowest formation other than a section, which the three of them in a platoon, and they are always in battle. They're the ones that are eyeball to eyeball, with the enemy. So that they're a great responsibility for a platoon commander, and you can learn so much in that job, as a young officer like that. And these are company officers. I say two of them got MCs, so that they did them an awful lot of good. And although Major Irwin, the company commander, was very strict in that, it paid dividends. Paid dividends indeed. And he got the best out of them. And it did them the world of good to know what to do, and to do it, know that it will be right as well. Because the Battle of the Hook was controlled, literally, by OC, the Major Irwin, and the command post, because it was an absolute stickler for communication. He really was he had it to a fine art, and he was in communication with all his platoons all during the battle. Telephone line was blown out back to command, the battalion command post, but they were able to keep in contact by wireless all through the whole battle. And it's all down in black and white. So that said a great deal about the type of chap he was in that. And for the young officers to be able to come up to that screen, up to what he wanted them to be. And if they did draw him well, they got told about it, and there was no after effects. I mean, it wasn't one of these blocks that lingered in it. If you were told off, you were told off, and that was the finish. So I was very, very happy to be with him, I must say, and so was the rest of the company.
Can you say something about the allocation of decorations after that battle?
Well, the commanding officer got a DSO, Colonel Major Irwin got a DSO. There were two officers in A Company got MCs, and one in D Company got an MC.
But is it difficult to decide who's going to get the decorations?
Well, when the committee is picked, and it was again Major Irwin who picked the committee, it's people who were there and in the midst of it, so they would be able to see who was who performed better than anyone else, so that you would usually come down to the same person, and you would literally nearly all agree to it. That was the one that deserved it most. But as I say, that there's the usual thing that there's never enough decorations to go down. You only get a certain amount, and that comes down from division. They dictate how many you'll get to share out. But there was quite a lot of mention in dispatches, which is always a good thing to have, because that's that means that you've probably been recommended for it anyway, but somebody's pipped you at the post.
Is there anything else we need to say about Korea before we talk about leaving it for Kenya?
No, the fact that when we handed over to the Royal Scots at with a great party and that sort of thing, and out the line, and the party went on, and rain as well, and they really let the hair down, and then back down to Busan and embarked again and made our way out back to Mombasa.
Now, can you tell me about your memories of the Kenya campaign, please?
Yeah, well, we didn't know until very late on in the during our stay in the before we left Korea. We didn't know exactly where we were going. We thought there might have been Cyprus or Hong Kong, and then anyway, it was suddenly came up we would be going to we would go to Kenya, and it was a question of families, because we had been away for over a year, and there was a lot of problems at home with families, young children and things like that, and dad's been away and that sort of thing anyway, we thought this would be a good posting, because Kenya's a lovely place. Anyway, we arrived in Mombasa disembarked and made our way by train into Nairobi, where we got a tremendous welcome by the locals.
The local white people?
Yes, and the coloureds and that as well, yeah. The regiment came with a tremendous name from Korea, and that was all in the news and that. Anyway, we moved up country into various positions and that, again split up. And the battalion headquarters was in a place called Gilgil, and again under canvas, because there are no barracks in Kenya. Again, acclimatization and getting settled in, the usual thing. Our primary job was patrolling and chasing after Mau Mau themselves. Disgusting, terrible people. They're terrible people. And you wouldn't believe that the things that they did, and the oath that they had to take was something, well, it really is the most disgusting thing I've ever read. It was quite a good camp there, but what we were all worried about was that everybody was due, all the regulars, we were due 8 weeks' leave, and people who had been abroad before going to Korea could have claimed a home posting, which you're due. So we all said the majority of us said that if we get the wives and families out, then we won't bother about the home posting. So that The colonel had a bit of a battle with the higher ups, with his general in Nairobi and that, and he said that there were no quarters. So the colonel came up with the idea. He said, "Well, what about now that the rebellion is on, the Mau Mau rebellion and that, and the tourist workers, there were no tourism as much as what it used to be in the past, so there was a lot of hotels that were more or less empty. And how about using them?" So they reluctantly agreed that we probably could do this, but it would have to be done and with the... It meant that the general said that if you get your families into hotels, it won't stop him or his staff from moving the husband up and down the country. So he said it could mean that your wives and families could be, left in the hotels and that on their own. They won't see them a great deal, which wasn't very nice at all. But at the same time, it did mean that the families were there. You could get home to them occasionally. But anyway, our company moved from there into another company position where we're in a village. Because everything there, the Mau Mau were in the forests and the bamboo forest and that, and the very difficult to patrol because of the, especially if you hit the bamboo and that, because it's like, hitting a brick wall. And anyway, we got in this position and that, and again, the company was under canvas, but we managed to get the native huts. They were excellent accommodation. And they know that they were cleared out of the villagers were the headman, they were cleared out of there, so, and spick and span they were when we got them there. And so that went quite well. We had one or two brushes with gangs, and fired on them, and I said that these occasions, one is those are types that you didn't want to take prisoners, that they've done such dreadful things, but they were beginning to get the feel of the thing, and but again it was a bit unfair on the jocks themselves, because that had all this rough time in Korea and what they'd gone through, and very few people in Korea did get leave, very few, and then again to be put in these positions away up country, away from sort of civilization again, and the bit of murmurs of dissent about that, and when they were in the position where you could probably bust them into anywhere near a small town or that, where they could get to a cinema or probably a local dance, that was okay, you could do that. But again, soldiers are soldiers, and having been away all that time in Korea and then split up again, that they got a wee bit of merry, put it that way. And of course the Nairobi staff didn't like this sort of thing at all, and which was a bit unfair in a way, but we started to get one or two bad hats joining us there, people who should never have been allowed in the army, and the recruiting was you could only classify it as being recruiting in quantity, not quality, and the repercussions was being felt by people like ourselves in that.
In what way were they bad hats?
Oh well, some of them had in one case I think one block had about 16 civilian court appearances or something, and
convictions
and that sort of thing, and the others as well, but they were soon ousted. They were soon out of the army. They got managed to get them kicked out, and they got rid of them that way. But that was and it caused a wee bit of feeling amongst the troops, and we didn't think a great deal of the staff, you know, in Nairobi. But
had damage been done in Nairobi?
No, well, there was. We had a company went there once, and there had been a bit of trouble with the drunkenness and that sort of thing. But nothing that said it was untoward. And the whole story is that when troops, if they go on the spree, if you fall by the wayside, it's up to your mates to get you back without involving anybody else outside the military. And the commanding officer will deal with it. And they'll be punished more severely by his commanding officer than whatever we'll do with a civilian judge. And the regiment won't be tainted with anything then. So I think they learned that lesson, and so did the people in charge of the company as well learned that lesson about that. But that passed over all right, and I had a great time. I was RSM then, and I had a great time after that because I did a lot of flying with some of the small aircraft with the company positions and that, along with the CO, and that was great. That was great indeed. You know, you got the flying over the animal bay, or not jungle, but the elephant, giraffe, and all that sort of thing, and all the types that we had. And viewing it from there was really great. But so the wives, we expected them to be, and families to be coming out more or less right away. But they didn't start to come out until December, which was more than 6 months after we had arrived there. And they were moved into hotels. We moved into a hotel just outside Nairobi. It wasn't all that great accommodation. We dined as though you were living in the hotel sort of thing, and that, and the food wasn't nothing extraordinary whatsoever. And anyway, I moved from there. I had to move because of the nearness to battalion headquarters. We moved up to below Mount Kenya to a hotel there. That was we got a banda. A banda is a sort of a wooden bungalow, and with a couple of bedrooms, a sitting room and that, and a huge fireplace, open fire, and very comfortable indeed. And we had the meals in the hotel, and again, the food wasn't all that great there, but at night time when I got cold, the fire would be lit by one of the boys, and you could cook a meal yourself, sort of thing, and that. And so that was all right. We enjoyed that, and we were at the base of the Mount Kenya, and an inspiring sight it is, that the snow capped and what have you, and that. And of course, the equator line runs through that part. And in the hotel bar, they have a metal bar across the bar counter, where you can stand with one foot on each side of the equator, sort of thing, and that. And it was run by a mad admiral of the Navy. I'm sure he was mad. That he used to roar and shout at the staff and what have you. And that. I dined with him and had drinks with him one night and that. And he was a very nice bloke, a very nice chap, and he's typical, old naval officer and that. And he'd be very chuffed to have us, I must say. But there it was. And
how much different were your duties as RSM from what you'd had as...
Well, I did a lot of running around then, because I was visiting companies and staying with them for a couple of nights, sort of thing, and that, and, showing the face and what have you. And again, the job was ammunition. I was responsible for the ammunition in the battalion and for storage and distribution. And we had problems with that, in as much again that the most of the casualties in a from the Momo was by using our own ammunition was used. So that great care had to be done about the issuing of ammunition, and then it had it to ensure that every round was accounted for. Because if one round went missing, and if it had been pinched, by anybody, it could have been anybody in the camp, it was the camp followers or the worked in that, then that could have been the life. But so that was quite a difficult job to get sorted out. But we did get it done. And as I say, that we had quite a lot of successes with the Mau Mau. And when you went on these patrols, if you killed any Mau Mau, you had to fingerprint them. And this was very, very difficult to do, fingerprint them when you had a dead body. And anyway, we did get issued with the sort of small pack where you could do this. But the usual method, which had been done in the past, I think before we come there, was that they chop off the hands and bring them back only. But this was, again, we were told that this is not to happen. We had trackers, native trackers, and of course we had the representatives from the Kenya regiment, who were very nice young men, and they were attached to us and whatnot, and we could speak the language, and so they were very, very helpful when you were on these patrols and in situations, and they were really very well liked. But I said it was a beautiful country. The old settlers, the old farmers, the old colonials, they were fine people, that they had come out there in the early days, and they knew the country, like the palm of their hand, and the people who worked for them, the Kikuyu, mostly Kikuyu, and I say that they looked after them, and they were very friendly towards us. And they were delightful in having people to come and visit them and stay with them and have a meal with them and that sort of thing. It was the Nairobi crowd. It was the ones that they weren't so like so much, because they were inclined to be the ones that arrived there just after the war. They get rich quick and take all, give nothing, and so that the. We didn't have much to do in Nairobi, quite frankly. I think where one or two families lived there, and I think my wife was involved along with the CEO's wife, and that. I know they did married families, say get-togethers and things like that. But it was very difficult because of the being so far apart and that. But eventually we moved from there back to the Lake Hotel, which was at the round about Nakuru, I think it was. Around that area. Nakuru is one of these, you often see it on television, one of these sodium lakes, and you get the flamingos. And it's one of the most wonderful sights you can see if you go along the escarpment and overlook that and see all the pink and the white, and that really is. And the movement of them, it's a tremendous sight. We moved there for a bit, and I had to go back to battalion headquarters, and we moved into an old Italian prisoner of war camp, which had huts. If they were occupied mostly by bats, and but at least the troops were able to get them under, under a roof, as against the tent. So that wasn't too bad, and we had a mess there, which had been a quite a large building it was, and we could have cinema shows and whatnot, and we could mess as a proper mess, and the same with the officers, and they could hold battalion parades and things like that. So that that went down quite well. But just before moving there, we moved into a bungalow just outside Nairobi, which was the in a coffee plantation, which was a chap who was on he went on leave to UK along with his family and that, and myself and another sergeant major, we shared it. It was quite a big bungalow and quite a large garden, eucalyptus trees and what have you, and we had a houseboy, a cook, a wood chopper, and we had a bit of their families lived on the, you know, in at the bottom of the garden, and the head boy was very good. He was very good, very well spoken in that. And the trouble was that when we were there, that he had already had two wives, and goodness knows how many chickens, and that, and he was in the throes of going to buy another one. And Kay used to have the problem of looking after them, you know, with any illnesses. They used to all come to see her and that, and it's wonderful what an aspirin can do. So this is the old aspirins. That's the thing I should have mentioned in about Korea, but the paludin pill. We used to have to take that every day, every day. But that was quite a pleasant stay there. It was down, you probably heard of Happy Valley.
Yes.
Well, it was in that area. And we had quite a few parties with locals and that. And I came back, we were away quite a bit, you know, for 2 or 3 days at a time, or probably a week at a time and that. So our wives had to be armed. And they carried, they had a pistol with them and a revolver in them in the house and that. I think Kay kept that. And they had been given lessons in shooting and what have you. And so that was in case that there should be anything happen while we were away. And we came back one day and Kay told me that the head boy had been taken away by the police. And when she had gone down to the local police station to find out, you know, what had happened and whatnot, she was told that he was involved in the murder of a relative of some kind, not his stepfather, but his father-in-law or something. He was supposed to be involved in that, and so that was us without a houseboy then.
So was he a Maoai?
Yes, I was. He was a Kikuyu, but there was a lot of the Kikuyu were in the Maoai as well, and our old wood chopper, I don't know where he came from. He arrived one day in that, and they arrived, he had a piece of cloth over his shoulder, and